welcome to the Xbox Wrap-Up Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Logan, or just Logan, depends on how you want to call me, and you're going to be listening to the next hour's worth of industry news, all distilled down thanks to yours truly. We're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff that happened this week, so if you missed out on the news, don't worry, I've got you covered. We're going to be covering God of War as it pertains to PlayStation and what I think of that, and kind of the collector's editions that got announced as well, too, and why I think maybe Xbox is missing out a little bit on that. We're going to be talking a lot about Skull and Bones. We got a release date as well as a bunch of information. I dug up a bunch of info kind of pertaining to how that's going to compare to, say, Sea of Thieves if you're coming from that community. We're going to be talking about Fortnite. Surprisingly enough, I got into Fortnite, and it's because of Indiana Jones. They finally figured out how to get me in there. So we also got news that a veteran is back for 343 Studios working on Halo. The famous Halo 2 E3 demo is going to be made playable thanks to 343. We got Fall Guys with some news there. Lollipop Chainsaw, which is an interesting game if you don't know about it. I'll be talking about that. Pokemon Puzzle League is coming out on Nintendo Switch Online next week. So if you're a fan of that, it's a really good game. We also got news that there's going to be a new Nintendo Switch Online, OLED model that's coming out, but it's not an improvement on the hardware. It's just a cosmetic thing. All that and more on this week's episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up. All right, let's get the first big story out of the way. I know this is an Xbox news, but I gotta say, God of War Ragnarok got a release date. It was on my birthday. I was very excited about that. It was really awesome just to kind of finally have a little more certainty that God of War is in fact releasing this year. I got to play through the first God of War not too long ago. It hasn't been that long since I played through the first game. And by the time I got to the end of that story, I was enthralled. I love the characters. The gameplay is amazing. They did such a good job building a game that does not cut in camera angles. Like, it's a one camera angle game. And how they do that is beyond me. It's fantastic thought and design that goes into this. So I've been waiting for God of War Ragnarok for a while. They announced that this was going to be something that was coming in, I believe, 2019. They said it was going to come out 2020. And then the pandemic hit and everything just kind of got pushed back, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, because it's 2022. The consoles launched in 2020. And this was supposed to be in the first year, I believe, during 2021. And then obviously they push back stuff and now we kind of have like for certain dates and stuff. And the biggest thing for this is that not only is it coming out in this year, but it's coming out November 9th, which is on a Wednesday or Odin's Day. And this is a really interesting bit of news because they've known for a while that their marketing was going to be tied to a specific day. They went with a Wednesday because of the mythology tie-in to Odin and that story, which is going to be very prevalent in God of War Ragnarok as it ties directly to the prevention of Ragnarok. With this, it's interesting from a gaming perspective because a lot of people were thinking like if God of War launches this year, they should totally take the 11/11 date, which was the former date for Starfield, a game that was going to be launching on Xbox that was an Xbox exclusive that was pushed back to 2023. Now that we know that it's coming out with all of its collector's editions and stuff like that, I wanted to break down a little bit of this because I'm really excited about it. And I figured I'd pull from the actual PS blog in this case, where they had two really cool videos. One actually has the video of the main actor of Thor, who's Ryan Hurst, as well as Raph, the art director. The pre-orders for this start on July 15th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 7 a.m. Pacific time, which sucks because I'm going to have to get up early if I want to pre-order these because I usually don't get up till about 8 o'clock in the morning my time. So I'll have to get up early to see if I can get one of these. But if you just want the games, The games are going to be $60 for the PS4 edition and $70 for the PS5 version. If you remember, this was the promise that was made from Jim Ryan way back after the kerfuffle that happened last year with Horizon Forbidden West's pricing scheme, where they said it's going to be $70. And everyone was like, whoa, 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 whoa. You said this game was going to have a free upgrade from PS4 to PS5. And Jim Ryan had to come back and say, we said that was within the launch window. And we're like, okay, you said launch window, but you also said these games. So if you delayed the game, that doesn't absolve you of saying that these games were going to be getting free upgrades. So they said going forward after Horizon Forbidden West that every game that was PS4 and PS5 cross-play, or not crossplay, cross-gen, was going to have a $10 currency equivalent upgrade from the PS4 to the PS5 version. I will be picking up the PS5 version. I will probably be buying the collector's edition. And if I can, I kind of want to get the Jotnar collection. So let's talk a little bit about the two different collections for the collector's editions. You can get the base game if you want. You can pre-order it. If you pre-order it, they've got some launch edition items that come with it, as far as Kratos and Atreus, different types of cosmetics, which look really beautiful. Honestly, they look really good. I'm glad they do that. Honestly, if you go and buy a physical copy, there's always a chance if you pick up a copy after launch that you'll still be able to get that launch edition. I just recently had that with Far Cry 6. I bought it from Best Buy. I went to pick it up, and when I picked it up, it happened to be one of the launch editions ones. So not a lot of people buy Ubisoft games right off the bat. So when I got it on sale, it was one of the older copies that was like from October of last year, which was really crazy. So it's definitely possible to still get these if you miss out on the launch pre-order for that and you just pick up the edition afterwards. There's two collector's editions. There's a standard collector's edition, and then there's a Jotnar edition, which I actually really like the Jotnar edition. I think it's honestly way better. So there's a digital deluxe edition as well too. So if you don't want the physical stuff, but you still want all the goodies that come with the collector's editions, you can pick up a digital deluxe edition that'll have the full God of War game. It'll have it for PS4 and PS5. It'll have the Darkdale armor that's for Kratos and Atreus, as well as the weapons for each respective characters. It'll have the official God of War Ragnarok digital soundtrack, which is really nice. Apparently Dark Horse made a digital mini art book of this. I'm very curious about how that's going to work out. There's an avatar set for your PlayStation profile, and PlayStation 4 owners will get a PS4 theme. I'm really bummed about the PS4 themes because I really loved those. I had the Ghost of Tsushima one when I bought that digitally, and I had it on my PS4 for a very long time, and it was beautiful. It was really serene. The PS5 kind of does that. If you've got a game and you hover over the game will have its own music. It'll have its own background. So the themes are kind of built in normally, and it's kind of a... It just depends, because sometimes I want to have it like there all the time. Let's get into the Ragnarok collector's editions. So I really love that Ryan Hurst was there to kind of showcase these collector's editions in this video. It was a really nice video, and I think he did a stellar job kind of showing off the different little items and really kind of basking in the awesomeness that is like these collector's editions. Like, they sold it well, so kudos to them for being able to do that. Let's talk about what's in the collector's edition. So the collector's edition comes in a really big box, and the big box has lots of little compartments that will open up as you kind of pull things out of this. So the main one that you're going to get is a printed voucher for the full game for PS4 and PS5. That's kind of normal. The collector's edition will also have a steelbook display case that shows like a bear and a wolf on the front cover, and then some runes on the back. And this is a question that I'm very curious about. With steelbook cases, if there's no disc, do they still Do they still, like, why would you want to have a display case of the Steelbook if you don't actually have a game disc to preserve it? Even with my Cyberpunk 2077, I picked up, I was gifted by two really awesome people who gave me one, they gave me a copy of the Almighty Crit. He gave me a copy of the actual game. And then Captain Balzania from the Keelhauled podcast, he actually gave me the Steelbook, and I have both now, and the Steelbook holds the disc. I can always throw that disc into a system and boot up the base copy of the game that was available at launch. It's a very interesting build as well, I would say, too. So I'm really curious to find out why there isn't a physical disc coming with God of War Ragnarok, and if you buy a physical copy, a normal physical copy, does it just have the actual code? Now, a lot of people will argue that there's not really a reason to, because you need to put the disc in the game and the game has to authenticate it and then download the game off of the server anyway, so you don't really need the disc, but the disc is just the authorization key. What I will say is that I don't see, I see that kind of as an argument for what you're really getting. Like, you're never really buying your games anymore. You're buying your games, but you're buying your games knowing that there's going to be a shelf life, that there's an eventuality that will happen, that you may not have access to those games on that console for any point. They could very easily shut down the access to those games. So, moving beyond that, let's talk about some of the other things that come in with the standard collector's editions. There are two-inch veneer twin carvings, and these carvings are in the style of the little wooden toys that Atreus was carving in the first game of the Holdra brothers from the God of War game in the first one. I believe these are the twins that they help kind of upgrade your weapons as you're going throughout the story. So these are two little carvings of those. There's also a dwarven dice set. This set comes with a set of dice with a quality wood-like finish in a dice bag with a symbol of Yggdrasil on the outside. Hopefully I'm not butchering these names because I love the Norse mythology. The other main thing in this is the 16-inch Mjolnir replica. This is the version in God of War that is of Thor's hammer. With this, you should not expect the Marvel version of Thor's hammer. This is very much what an actual hammer of the time would have looked like. It is smaller than what you would expect, and that was the intent. It was a very small hammer according to the mythology. And if you guys ever get a chance, I would really recommend, and I'm going to see if I can look this up real quick. Here we go. I found it. It's Norse mythology is the book, and the author is Neil Gaiman, who I really love Neil Gaiman's work. I think he's done a great job. I picked up the Audible version of it because he actually reads the book to you. So he does all the voices of all the different gods and stuff. And I actually really like, that's the way to go if I had my druthers about it. Like if you love God of War and you love Norse mythology and you haven't read this book, it is a fantastic book to get some authentic stories from the Norse mythology. Kind of tying in more details about like who these gods were in the mythology, like what their lives were, the stories from them, understanding that of course it's all mythology, but it builds a world that I think is absolutely fantastic. I really do. Such fun stuff that they had in that. And granted, a lot of it was kind of petty arguments between gods, but I don't know. It just seemed more natural, seemed more real life. So having the Mjolnir in here and having it be 16 inches, it's a chunky item. And I shout out to Ryan for kind of showcasing all of this. You know, you would take out each little bit and kind of marvel over it and stuff and talk about how cool it is and whatnot. And they showed you the box, which is the Knowledge Keeper's Shrine replica that they kind of shown you, like some of the things shown were some of the beautiful kind of wall arts that came from the previous game, kind of telling the story of what was going on in that world. And it's so cool. I really did love that. But then they had the Jotnar edition, and the Jotnar edition is a lot more kind of detailed. There's a lot more stuff in there that is more kind of like, if you're a fan of God of War, you really, really want to get this edition. So the Jotnar edition, which will most likely be more expensive, and we don't know the pricing on this, but we just know that it's going up on sale at July 15th. The Jotnar edition, instead of the Dwarven dice, they have Brock's dice, which Brock, obviously one of the twins that was in the first game. So it is more like specific to him, his style, fashioned after him. Then you've got a pin set, which has three animal heads, a falcon, a bear, and a wolf pin, each one having different kind of materials, and each material being very unique to the character from the game based on it is. So Frey's is full gold metal. Kratos is a full stone looking bear. And then wolf's pin is a blend of the two. Kind of an interesting thing to think about. Then they have the legendary Draupnir ring, which I don't know. I don't remember this, so I don't know the reference that they're making to it. And it's been so long since I've played through the game that I don't recognize that. So the other thing is the Yggdrasil cloth map, which shows the different worlds, the different realms on the world tree that you'll be visiting in God of War Ragnarok, which is really kind of cool because at the very, very top, you could see they had the Rainbow Bridge leading from Midgar and stuff. And just so cool. It really did look like it was a really nice cloth map. The big thing for me, though, is the 7-inch vinyl soundtrack. I just recently got a record player, thanks to my wife's birthday and her sister getting us one. So we've been picking up a lot of vinyl lately, a lot of good soundtracks. And they vary from time to time on the quality. Like, I would not recommend a Target exclusive vinyl. Those, for whatever reason, are terrible, terrible quality. But when you find like a good vinyl and it's got a good quality to it, it sounds really beautiful. The little pops and hisses really does kind of feel visceral as you're kind of like listening to this music. You can tell it's not clean. It's not intended to be clean. You're listening to the raw, the actual physical vinyl itself. And I'm looking forward to seeing if I can get this edition just for that vinyl soundtrack, especially given that it's a smaller sized vinyl. I don't have very many of those. And this is a really kind of green looking, beautiful color of it too. It looks like a jade almost. And I'm really excited. So if you guys are a fan of God of War, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for myself. I'm super looking forward to this. I got to watch the CGI trailer and it's fantastic. I think this game is going to just absolutely dominate this holiday. And I'm honestly glad that they're taking time with Starfield because it'll give me time to jump into Ragnarok and really kind of be able to enjoy that game without fearing missing out on the conversation that's happening with Starfield, especially given that Starfield seems like it's going to be a very large game. Ragnarok was maybe like a 20-30 hour game if you didn't do everything and you just wanted to get through the story. So I'm glad to kind of have something where I can dip in, get a really good experience, and then kind of dip back out and go back to my normal games and stuff. Let's talk about something else though. All right, let's dive into Skull and Bones. If you don't know what Skull and Bones is, think Assassin's Creed Black Flag. If you played that and you got into the boat and you sailed around to different islands to gather resources and you took on other ships and you kind of had that idea of what it's like controlling an entire ship and being able to lobby shots from your broadsides and take the helm and manage the sails and stuff, that is the impetus for Skull and Bones. As much as they understand there's a connection, they're trying very hard not to compare the two because Skull and Bones is not a game that is related to Assassin's Creed. It has the genetics of it, but it is very much a game that is set in an open world in a very large map, I will say, a map that's at least 3 to 4 times bigger than Sea of Thieves is. And the reason for it is because this is going to be in a world that is inspired by the Indian Ocean during the Golden Age of Piracy. And much like a Sea of Thieves, you're going to be sharing it with multiple people. So right off the bat, this game is coming out on November 8th. And actually, I don't know if I talked about so much. Yeah, no, I did. I talked about, okay, so Ragnarok is coming out November 9th. And Skull and Bones, in their infinite wisdom, thought, you know what? We know that We know that Starfield's going to be coming out November 11th. And then November 11th date got pushed back to 2020. So they thought, awesome, cool. We're awesome. That's fine. No biggie. And on July 6th, God of War announces their date as July or November 9th. And then everyone was really excited for that. And then the day after that, Skull and Bones announces that they are going to be launching the day before God of War Ragnarok. And let's just talking about that. That is such a big bummer for Skull and Bones. And I don't see this as a negative for Skull and Bones, because honestly, from what I've seen, this game looks really awesome. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun with friends, but it is not going to be the realistic version of Sea of Thieves. And the reason I say that has a lot to do with the type of game that it is. But just looking at it from a perspective of Ubisoft, Ubisoft will put out games that are games to make money, not necessarily games to make stories. God of War is very much a game to make a story, to tell a story. I think Skull and Bones is a game that is going to be a game as a live service, a game to make money. It's what Ubisoft does. It's what they're kind of leaning towards. They're trying to make Assassin's Creed games more like live service games. If you've been paying attention, they have a ton of story that's been pushed and a lot of content that's pushed out to Valhalla right now. I think they most recently just had a Ragnarok expansion come out not too long ago. So Ubisoft very much wants to get people in and hooked on a games as a service. So Skull and Bones is going to be that, which means that Skull and Bones is going to have a dedicated community when it comes out that are absolutely going to love this game. And pirates are in, so it's not too hard to ask them to jump over to this, especially given that... Here's the real bummer to me that I didn't think about this until recently. But with Skull and Bones coming out on November 8th, I thought, great. That means that PlayStation fans will finally have a pirate game. They will finally have a pirate game that they can play. Sea of Thieves is a Microsoft produced and published and designed game that is from Rare, that is probably never going to make it onto another console ever to this point. And it would be like having Halo on a PlayStation at this point, unless it's coming through Game Pass and you have to subscribe to Game Pass. I really can't see Microsoft really letting go of that exclusivity outside of PC games where it's already available. So for the longest time, anyone that's a fan of pirates and playing PlayStation, you didn't have an actual pirate game. And then I realized the dates. The fact that Skull and Bones is releasing the day before God of War almost guarantees that no one who owns a PlayStation, and to be fair, like God of War next to Spider-Man is one of the most played video games on that console that's an exclusive. Like it has sold a ton of copies. So there is a very good chance that a lot of PS5 players are going to be looking to play God of War Ragnarok, which means that a lot of PlayStation fans are probably not going to be playing Skull and Bones. And with the history of Ubisoft games and their marketing, there is a very good chance that this game is going to drop down to $40 within the first quarter, down to $30 and $25 within the first half of the year. If not, you will definitely see a drop to $15 after the first year, if not sooner. For example, Far Cry 6, it's been less than a year. I've got it for $15 through Best Buy. Again, I got the launch edition with it too. So Ubisoft games have a big history of dropping in price, which means that for most PlayStation fans, there's a very good chance that this game will go unnoticed. It probably won't be talked about much at launch. They'll have the standard coverage of this is what's out today, and most people will probably not play it because within hours of it launching, people are going to be able to play God of War Ragnarok, which means that the PlayStation aspect of Skull and Bones is going to be very slim. Now, if you look at the Xbox side of this, Xbox fans, if you're a pirate fan, you've been living high life because you've had a pirate game for the last 4 years, since 2018. It has not been an issue for you. You've had it as long as God of War has been out. And if you want a pirate game, you will probably dip into this But the biggest issue is that Ubisoft is going to be charging $70 at the beginning of its launch. And Xbox players are used to Game Pass. If this is not a day one Game Pass thing, which I guarantee you it isn't, because they haven't answered the question about what games are coming to Game Pass back at their Xbox Bethesda showcase, Skull and Bones was not on that list. And they made a very, very keen point to talk about the big games that were coming to Xbox in the next 12 months. And this is definitely hitting within the first or the next 12 months, which means that this game will most likely not show up on Game Pass day one. It may show up on Game Pass down the line because we've already got a bunch of Ubisoft games that come to the actual service, but a lot of people that are playing on Xbox are trepidatious about starting new games or buying games because they know that eventually there's a good possibility that you will be able to get it on Game Pass. So not only are they fighting against the God of War on PlayStation for fans of that console, but they're also fighting the fact that this is not going on Game Pass, and that we've already had Sea of Thieves as a really good pirate game to be able to sate that desire. Now, that doesn't mean that a lot of pirate fans aren't going to jump into this. A lot of fans of pirate games are going to be jumping into this. I just would not expect a lot of people to jump into it at $70, especially at launch, especially when a lot of people know this is something that's going to drop in price, and they plan on having this game be a long-tailed service game. They've already got plans for the future content. All content that's coming to the game post-launch is going to be free. I imagine they're probably going to have cosmetics available the way they do for Valhalla or the way they do for Far Cry that you can purchase for real money as microtransactions. So I would not expect anything less out of a Ubisoft game. So as we kind of dive into Skull and Bones, it is a very realistic-esque piratey game. They are in a fantasy world, which means you're going to have really fantastic creatures. You're going to have like outposts that are bombastic, that have like ships kind of facing each other on high rocky mountain ridges. And it's going to be kind of that Pirates of the Caribbean aesthetic, you know, very realistic, but very fantasy. In this world, you are going to be in the golden age of piracy, which is not something that you're in right now for Sea of Thieves. So you're going to see piracy at its highest point. So you're going to have a lot of ships, a lot of cosmetics, a lot of different cosmetics to kind of show off your own character as well, too. Some of the main things that you want to take away from this is that there has been a lot of discussion about what this looks like. And I can tell you right now, Ryan Bernard is the senior game director over at Ubisoft. He is someone who was working on The Division back in the day, left to join up at IO Interactive to work on Hitman and Hitman 2. But then he ended up spending from 2017 to 2021 working for War Games, which as a design developer director. And War Gaming, if you don't know, are the folks that make World of Warships. So if you look at Skull and Bones and you think, gosh, that ship turns really fast, it fires the same way that it does in World of Warships, then you will not be surprised to find out that the main design development director is the one that is the senior game director for Skull and Bones, and has been for the last year. So not the full development cycle too. This game has actually been in development since 2018. They've had plenty of homework to do on Sea of Thieves to be able to take a look at it and see exactly like what people like about Sea of Thieves, what they don't like, and then add that to what they've been working on with Skull and Bones. We found out a bunch of information from it as well too. I broke down the trailer and the stream that they had. There's not going to be any kind of campaign for this. There's going to be free content and events that come post-launch. The main game in the main drive for this is going to be Pirate Kingpins. These Pirate Kingpins are going to have factions, and you're going to have to go out and take down these kingpins to raise your infamy. And infamy is going to be your progression level. Let me get a little bit into that a little bit later. The way I got my notes is all weird. So this is going to be a shared game world with 20 players all in their own ships per server. You can solo, but they expect you to join up with other people. They're going to have opt-in PvP servers, which means that for a lot of people who have wanted to have PvE servers for Sea of Thieves, this may be the game that actually services your desire to have a PvE server. We don't know a whole lot of details about that, but I do know that with the Infamy ranks, the end game for Skull and Bones is going to have you become a pirate kingpin. At that point, a lot of the end game content is going to be driven towards a lot more competitive play style. So you may end up having to do PvP at the very top ranks of the game to be able to get that end game content, whatever it may be. Talking a little bit about the actual open world size of this, I mentioned this a bit ago, but they did talk about how games like Far Cry and Assassin's Creed and Sea of Thieves have about 85 to 95 square kilometers of world space. Skull and Bones is going to be about 625 square kilometers in size. And the point of this, I think, really comes down to the fact that with a game like Sea of Thieves, you can have up to six ships, 24 players per server, but each player is part of a crew, and each crew is going to be part of a small or large ship. So while you do have a lot of players in Sea of Thieves, they're going to be far fewer ships, whereas this case, you're going to have up to 20 different individual players. But each individual player is going to have their own ship. So you need a lot of space for a lot of those different things. Plus, you want a lot of islands that you can go and venture out to be able to find different things as far as like resources for crafting or different hidden treasures. They've got treasure maps that you're going to be able to go and dig up stuff. There were some very interesting things that came as a result of a way to raise your infamy, which is your obviously your infamy is your power progression here that unlocks different traders, different crews, different contracts, bigger ships, different types of weapons, things like that to kind of increase your power level as you kind of go about and get to that pirate kingpin thing or kingpin rank. So in an article that came from GamerBraves.com, this was from Alex Briggs. They got a chance to actually sit down with Ryan and talk about the game a bit. So some of the information that came from this, one of the questions was, other than naval combat and raising infamy, is there any other way to experience the pirate fantasy like seeking treasure? Bernard goes on to say, let's be clear, Skull and Bones is a pirate game. You're interacting in combat in some ways, whether you're trying to plunder a forge or just take down a merchant for the loot. Those are all pirate events, right? But you can game infamy in a lot of different non-combat ways as well. The first time you craft a big ship, the first time you're exploring a new area, you can discover treasure maps and then follow these maps, which are very non-combat oriented. We want to make sure that there are enough quests to do these things. Most of what you do is piracy oriented, and it does not really sell me on the non-combat. It's like the first time you craft a ship, okay, that's one time. The first time you discover an area, okay, that's one time. You can discover treasure maps, and then you can have those follow those maps to recover plunder. Okay, but how interactive is that? Is that like pulling up to an island and then sending out your crew and having them dig something up and then bring it back and then you're done? Or are you actually going to be going out and trying to find where this is based on landmarks, based on riddles, based on direction, things like that? Things that Sea of Thieves does really, really well. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about from this article was actually the infamy rank. So infamy, as it gets higher and higher, does not seem to have a level cap. The question came up in this interview, the main missions is to raise our infamy, but does it have a level cap? What happens if we max it? And Bernard says, how do I say this? We definitely have a plan for endgame, which involves infamy. It's something that we can only communicate a little bit later, but there is no level cap at launch. There may be a time when we need to wait for the endgame to come about. When that happens, then you'll see the plans on how Infamy works in conjunction with the life cycle that we have for the game. So you're definitely not stuck at level 50 like some other games. And honestly, I took a lot more barb to that comment than probably most will, because as many of you who've played Sea of Thieves, you may know that once you hit level 50 in three trading companies, regardless of what those trading companies are, you get Pirate Legend status. The game has progressed since then. The game no longer has a level 50 as a max cap. It's now 75. You can hit 30 in Athena's Fortune. Hunter's Call is the only one that you can hit 50 in, and they shut down the arena, so you don't have to worry about that. But it definitely is one of those things where it's like, okay, I get it. Infamy goes up to a point that it doesn't really stop. But what's the point of having a rank Infamy if there isn't an end goal for that? I want to understand, like, you know, what do I get at the end if you're going to have progression? And the progression in Sea of Thieves, the ranks that you earn there are purely a way to unlock additional content. It's not intended to be a power gain. There is no power gain in Sea of Thieves. It is a horizontal power level system. You are as dangerous and less... Your skill in the game comes from your experience and your knowledge, not your weapons. The weapons that you have are just as powerful as a day one pirate. It doesn't matter how long you've been sailing. Whereas with Skull and Bones, your Infamy is going to unlock different ships. It's going to unlock different weapons. It's going to unlock different ways to protect your ship and open up different contracts. So the more time you spend in the game, if you're playing on a regular basis, you will eventually become a kingpin, which means that at some point you will come across someone who's newer to the game and will have less armor on their ships, weaker weapons, things like that. And that will be a very hard thing to have as a game that is a live service. How do you keep the playing field even in a game where there is power progression? One of the interesting things that came from this reveal was a crafting system and a scavenger system. You start out as a scavenger. You have to craft a spear to hunt sharks and fish to be able to feed yourself. You get a small little ship to start off, and you find your way to the first nearest pirate den. Once you're there, you can do tasks to raise your Infamy so that you can get a ship. And then once you get a ship, you can get a crew. But the crafting comes down to being able to build different weapons based on blueprints to get recipes to be able to make food for your crew, because your crew has a morale system. If you don't feed your crew, the morale goes down. And unlike the saying, the beatings will continue until morale improves. If the morale goes down to a certain point, they will mutiny and you will lose your ship. And if you lose your ship, you will lose all of your resources. You'll be able to get some of them back, and you can eventually sail out after you get another ship to go get your other ones. But it's not something that you want to mess around with, as I imagine you probably don't want to lose your ship. And I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know how I feel about having to manage a morale system for my ship for a pirate game. It's not something that I thought, oh yeah, that's something I want to babysit. And crafting food for that sake, again, another thing that, while it lends itself to the realism for the game, and as far as, like, you know, being out on the seas for long extended periods of time, I understand the desire to want to keep morale high by feeding your crew and hunting down food or making sure you have the proper amount of provisions. They've done a lot of really good work to make sure that you have enough ammo, to balance the ammo versus the storage space that's on your ship versus the amount of food that you're going to need versus the supplies that you'll need to repair in case you get in a battle. Like, they've done a very good job of building what would be a quartermaster simulator, which, if you're not too familiar, a quartermaster was the role on a ship where you had to maintain all of the supplies, keep the crews in order, things like that. You're basically the mommy of the ship. The captain was the daddy, but the quartermaster was the mommy. And the mommy being the one that actually cared enough to do something about making sure that the kids stay alive as opposed to the deadbeat dad. And for all you dads out there, I'm not speaking to you. I'm just making a generalization that I don't actually believe in. So with this, I'm very kind of on the fence about a scavenging and a crafting system. It's not something I'm a huge fan of in games. It's not something I really look for in games. There's plenty of games out there that do it really well. There's plenty of games out there that do it really bad, but I'm not a Minecraft person. I've never played Valheim. I've barely touched V Rising. I've never played Ark. Conan the Barbarian, I played to get a weekly challenge done, and that was really hard. I played Atlas, and God, Atlas was not fun. So I dropped that like a bad habit. And it's not something that I really want to play around with in Skull and Bone. So I was a little disappointed about that because it's not something that is part of the piracy thing to me. Like, the fantasy of pirates is to go out and to have fun, have adventures, get treasure, sink ships, you know, shake your hook in the hand and scream R. I wasn't about to go around to islands and, you know, take down trees so that I could have lumber for repairs and stuff like that. I get enough of that through Sea of Thieves and making sure that I have supplies and stuff like that. But it's a lot more integral to a ship survival in Sea of Thieves. Like, if you don't do that and you get attacked, there's a really good chance you're going to sink, and that's the last thing you want to have in Sea of Thieves, because you don't earn any gold unless you actually turn it in yourself. You don't get gold just for participating in the seas. You know, you got to go out there and actually get it.
Come to join me, crew lad. Welcome aboard.
So the thing that I'm actually really excited about, the thing that I really, really want to dive into, is the fact that you can play this co-op. There's a chance that you'll be able to do it on PvE servers, and there's pirate dens. And these dens are like the Pirates of the Caribbean fantasy realms that I want to get into. Like, those are the things I really love. I love walking around places that look and feel like Tortuga. I want to have drunken bar fights. I want to have, places to go to be able to trade my wares, to be able to find contraband or rare things from different worlds, you know, that I haven't visited and can only imagine to sail to. Those are the kind of things that I love about pirate fantasy. Is I love that kind of, you know, Captain Hook on his ship in the middle of a dock, cursing his name or cursing Peter Pan's name, you know, on this crew of scallywags. You know, that's the pirate fantasy that I just love about this. So I'm hoping that with Skull and Bones, they've done enough to really kind of lean heavy into that atmosphere. Sea of Thieves is great, but they don't have big cities, and it's always been one of those limitations of the game. The way they've designed the game, they do not have big cities. It's a bummer to not have like a bunch of people populating a city, walking around, doing their own little things. It's one of the things that I think Valhalla actually does really, really well, is they just have a bunch of people in those little towns and they do things. They do their own things. You can sit there and watch them and it's unique. And they've got an animation loop on it. But, you know, if you're just kind of walking around doing your own thing, it feels lived in. And that's something that Sea of Thieves has been struggling to accomplish for a very, very long time. The one thing I will say is you can have a cat on the helm, and I'm all for that. I love ship cats. I think ship cats are adorable. I would love to have a ship cat. They also had a marsupial at one point too, which looked really adorable as well. So I love the idea that they're really giving you a lot of cosmetics. I love the idea that the ship combat looks and feels like either World of Warships or Black Flag. I'm not a huge fan of the fact that there's no story. Story is almost integral to me. You just heard me gush about God of War. I don't know anything about the story other than it's got Thor in it. So that's something that I think is a real kind of hindrance on there. I'm really bummed about the actual time frame that they're launching this, but this will also be the perfect excuse as to why this game does not do well. If this game doesn't do well, it will definitely be because PlayStation flans dessert. Ooh, that sounds good, actually. It will be because PlayStation fans were busy playing Ragnarok and Xbox fans already have Sea of Thieves on Game Pass. Those are the two things that any marketer will be able to go up to their boss and be like, this was a hard sale from the get-go. We should have shipped it earlier. We should have shipped it later. There was no way we were going to survive being able to put the game out on November 8th. So with that being said, will I play this? Yes. Will I play it at launch? Probably not. Not really. I mean, I may jump into it. I may decide to use Patreon funds to justify it so that I can actually give folks a good idea. If they want to play it and they want people to play it with, then I'll do that. But for the most part, I think everyone knows Ubisoft games drop in price real quick. It's a games as a service. So the first year's locked in for content. Most people would probably pick this game up when it's $20. And I don't blame them, because it does definitely feel like this is a game to make money. Let's talk about Fortnite and how I got into it. I do not play Fortnite. I do not generally like touch it. I'm not a big BR person. I'm terrible at building. Ever since they came out with a zero build mode, though, I think that I've really enjoyed the few moments that I have jumped into it. And while I've been really tempted to go into Fortnite for a lot of the skins with the Halo Infinite Master Chief Edition, they've got Kratos, Aloy, they've had the Gears characters, they've also had Tron characters, which were a huge, huge draw. I almost bit the bullet on that one. I've always kind of held off. I've never spent any money in Fortnite. I've played a little bit of it, but I haven't ever really justified it. Then I found out that Indiana Jones quests were being put in as part of the Battle Pass for Fortnite this week. And I really just could not help myself. I love Indiana Jones. It's one of my favorite franchises next to like Star Wars, as most of you are probably in the same boat. There's, you know, obvious issues with other films and stuff that really kind of take away from the franchise overall. But for the most part, I really love Indiana Jones. So when I saw this and I saw that it were quests, I thought, you know what, I'm going to work on this. I'm going to go in, I'm going to take a look and see if I can get that. Plus, Darth Vader is one of the skins that you can get at tier 100 for the Battle Pass. So let me take a look at it and see how hard this really is. So I went in, I took a look. They've got tons of quests for you to do each day, each week, and each month. And when talking to CJ Superpack from the Player One podcast, he's already really deep into his Fortnite, and he only plays maybe once or twice a night. And I decided that, thanks to Mark Delaney from GameSpot, who's one of the really great writers over there, writing up this article, kind of giving me an idea of like what I need to do it. There really isn't a whole lot. You get two different Indiana Jones skins. You've got an inflatable raft or a plane as the glider. You've got the staff with the figurehead on the top of it as you're kind of building things that you use to little pickaxes. I don't know what they call them. I'm just kind of going off the thing. Plus a bunch of little icons and avatar things. So when I saw that it was essentially 8 quests, I was really excited to kind of see like what's going on with this. Like how much do I got to get in to be able to try and do these quests to get them? Turns out that the battle pass for Fortnite is only $9 at most. And at that point, I'm in. Because $9 is not much, and you can actually get a fair amount of the V-Bucks currency back through the Battle Pass. So for all intents and purposes, I honestly am not really not holding out too much on doing this. I'm in it to get my Indiana Jones skins. I'm excited for that. I definitely want to do that within the season. Plus, I want to see how far I can get within this season, see if it's something that really jumps in. So, and going through zero build mode on Xbox, I don't know if it's because I'm playing against a lot of bots. I'm assuming that a lot of bots are in there, but it's not nearly as hard as I expected. When I play Apex or if I play Warzone, I'm usually dead pretty quickly. Like I play the looter side of things for a while. I hang out, I go in, and I can never get a kill. But with Fortnite, I feel like I can usually 1v1 someone fairly easily. It's usually not too hard. And I really like that. I like knowing that I'm being kind of matched up against players of my skill. And because of that, the losses that I have can be frustrating, because I thought that, you know, if I had just done something a little bit differently, or if I had a different weapon, I might have been able to pull it out. Or they're jumping around so much that I am having a tough time tracking them, and I don't want to mess up my tracking by jumping as well, too. That I feel like the losses aren't nearly as painful as they are in other games where it's clearly there was someone who just has an eagle eye. They've got a steady hand and they can take me down a lot faster. So I've been enjoying the Fortnite run. I think it's one of those games that if we're looking at what it is, it's honestly one of the best games out there. And seriously, it is Ready Player One. It has all of the franchises that you could possibly imagine in there. They're consistently adding new franchises that I didn't think they'd ever get access to. And they're bringing characters to this world that you can represent yourself in whatever fandom you like. And I think that's fantastic. I think it's amazing that they're able to do that. They've got Naruto stuff right now, which I didn't imagine. Like, they're totally going into these cell shaded characters. I would not be surprised if Dragon Ball Z was down the line at some point, if it hasn't been already. So that's kind of been what I've been jumping into lately. I've been really having a good time with the few games that I jump into with that. And it's mostly because what's available on Xbox right now just isn't quite as tempting as it usually is. Sea of Thieves is in the long span of its season. We've got the latest adventure, but I did the adventure. I really enjoyed it. I read all the journals. I dug all the lore, and I really got my fill of that. And Destiny is kind of in its lulls right now. We got the last bit of story out of that. I'm already well over my 100 in the season pass for that. I'm just grinding out stuff for the sake of grinding stuff out at this point. It's not even anything that I really need or have to work towards. I'm pretty much finished up with that. So I've been looking for other instances of games that I haven't dipped into that I would probably enjoy if I just gave it a little bit more time.
You mind telling me what you're doing on that ship?
Sir, finishing this fight.
Let's talk about something else that popped up on July 7th. If you don't know, if you're not a huge fan of Bungie, or if you don't follow that at all, July 7th is Bungie Day. It's something to do with the fact that the company loves having 777. I really don't know the history of this too well, but for all intents and purposes, 7-7 or July 7th has always been Bungie Day. And while I see a lot of people enjoying the content that comes to Bungie Day from Bungie themselves, Bungie proper, where they have Destiny and stuff. Like, for example, they just put on sale $150 Galahorn rocket launcher that is a Nerf gun, along with a ornament that comes with the gun. Stuff like that is stuff that's great if you're a fan of Destiny. But if you're a fan of Halo, there's not really a whole lot that they really celebrate, unfortunately. But we did get some interesting news. Joseph Staten over at 343 Industries said that he is happy to confirm that Halo veteran Paul Bertone has joined the team as studio technical design director. Paul and I met back in 1999, back in Bungie's Chicago days, and then shipped Halo 1 through 3, ODST, and Reach together. I'm thrilled to have Paul help lead the team or the future of Halo Infinite. And when you look at this, it's very interesting to think about, because Joseph Staten was brought in pretty late into the Halo Infinite game. In fact, he was brought in a little before the 1 year delay for Halo Infinite. He spent a lot of time taking a look at what was going on with the game and decided to really try and make some big sweeping changes across the campaign. Now, if you look at Halo Infinite and you look at the campaign, a lot of fans will say that this game was cut up a lot, that there wasn't a whole lot that really made it to the final product, and that there were supposed to be a lot of different biomes and areas that were taken out because of time. I'm hoping that with having Paul Bertone come back to the studio, that he and Joseph Staten are able to actually do something that will help reinvigorate the story and the campaign for Halo Infinite, push it forward in a way that satisfies the fans as well as continues in a good driving forward of the campaign that I got to play through, that I enjoyed, because I really enjoyed Halo Infinite. I think it's one of the best campaigns that I played on Xbox. It's one of those games that really stood out as just a fun, interesting experience. And I loved the story, especially coming off the back of playing all of the other Halo mainlines just before Halo Infinite had come out. And we found out that with this announcement, 343 is actually going to be recreating the iconic E3 2003 Halo 2 demo that had Master Chief kind of moving through New Mombasa, grabbing two of the SMGs, running around, having a not a brute, an elite, pull him out of the warthog and stuff. And for some reason, they decided that that was something that they wanted to do. So the Earth City demo never made it to the final version of Halo 2, but was universally considered a spectacle at the time, which it was. After going back and taking a look at it, I can definitely see why they say it's a spectacle. With IGN saying, there's little in the 8-minute demo that isn't worthy of awe. And outlined in a Halo blog post, it's been made playable for the first time as part of the Dig Site project, which will also bring back pre-release content from the original Halo Combat Evolved. This will include a ton of different assets, including previously unseen models, vehicles, NPCs, weapons, and even levels. So thank you to Ryan Dinsdale over IGN for writing up this article to kind of show like when this is or what this is going to be and when it's going to come out. We haven't seen too much as far as the details on when they're going to be doing this, but it is something that they do want to actually do. Really interesting kind of looking at the reviews for IGN. IGN actually had all of the different Halos ranked. Halo Combat Evolved was 9.7. Halo 2 was a 9.8. Halo 3 was a 9.5. Halo 3 ODST was a 9.0. Halo Reach was a 9.5. Halo 4 is a 9.8. Halo 5 is a 9.0, and Halo Master Chief Collection is a 9.0, and then Halo Master Chief Collection re-review back in 2019 is a 9.5, and Halo Infinite Multiplayer is a 9, and then Halo Infinite Single Player Campaign is a 9. So a lot of folks always say that Halo has lost its way. It's not nearly as good as it used to be, blah, 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 blah. Everyone has an opinion of it, but based on just reviews alone, Halo has never dropped below a 9. It is a pinnacle of Halo, or not Halo, of Microsoft's franchises. It is the God of War. It is the Nathan Drake for Xbox. So I really hope that they get the backing that they need. They spend a lot of money on this this engine. I really want them to come through and deliver an amazing story, an amazing campaign. I want them to fulfill all the promises that they've made as far as co-op campaign. After going through it last week, I really am excited to go through the campaign with people. I want to play through it. I want to see what it's like to play through it with other people, because if I'm being honest, when I was playing through the campaign and just even recently going back to it, it does feel very alone. You do feel very segregated, which is kind of the intent of the actual story. You're meant to feel alone. You're meant to feel like you're a one-man army trying to take down these HUDs or these what did they call them? FOBs. The FOBs and the attack points where the bases were and stuff. And while that's great, it's fun to play these games outside of a multiplayer competitive aspect and just be able to talk about the game, talk about the story with other people as you're actually going through it. Let's kind of wrap up the rest of this episode with some quick news. We got some quick news from Fall Guys. They reached 50 million players since going free to play. It is a very fun game. If you guys haven't played it, it's a great thing to jump into. I found out that thanks to buying the game through PlayStation and then linking it up to my Epic account and then downloading it on Xbox, not only was I able to get all of the skins that I had previously, but I was also gifted the first battle pass for that. If you haven't played Fall Guys, you're playing as a little clumsy character across the board with a bunch of other different characters. There's probably about 50 to 100. I have no clue how many are meant to be there. I think 60 is the goal there, and you're just going through obstacle courses. These obstacle courses are very fantastical. There's nothing that's really grounded in reality, and it looks really fun, and it is really fun, and your whole goal is to make it through these different levels till eventually you get to the end, and hopefully you have the opportunity to get a crown. The crowns are what you can then use to purchase cosmetics. So the better you are, the more cosmetics you can pick up over time. Eventually you get crowns just for kind of progressing through each different course. But if you get the crown at the end, you get a nice big pat on the back and you can pick up some cosmetics. But having it be free to play is nice. They've got a ton of cosmetics to go through. You can get the Halo Chief stuff if you logged in at the start of the launch for it. And I have my Tron stuff, which is good enough for me. That was the one that I did actually buy it on, not the Fortnite, which I should have got the Fortnite stuff because I think the Fortnite stuff is fantastic. We also got news that James Gunn is working with, I believe, Suda, who's Suda51, who did the No More Heroes franchise. They're looking to reboot Lollipop Chainsaw, which, if you don't know, Lollipop Chainsaw is one of those weird games that if you go back and take a look at it, it's just kind of like a hack and slash game where a cheerleader has a chainsaw and she's going around killing zombies. And that was about the depth it had. It was not a very good game. It did have some good licensed music. And honestly, I don't know why they want to go back and do this. I think Gunn has come out and said that he's never heard about it, and this is the first time from Suda or from Suda 51 that he's even heard about it. But this, like, I will say, if you take a look at James Gunn and you take a look at what he's done, and we're talking Suicide Squad here, we're talking Guardians of the Galaxy. If you take an action product and you put licensed music to it, and you add a chick with a weapon with ponytails, probably up James Gunn's alley. That's probably, like, that is his bag. So I'm not surprised that James Gunn would be interested in writing for this. I'm not surprised that Suda 51 would want to jump on to remake this. But we'll just have to wait and see, like, how this goes. But interesting thing to come out of nowhere. I really wasn't expecting this. In other news, Pokemon Puzzle League is coming to Nintendo Switch Online next week. This is coming out on the 17th. Ryan Dinsdale, of course, coming from IGN, wrote up this article. Pokemon Puzzle League will become the 17th Nintendo 64 game available on Switch when it arrives on July 15th. Announced on Nintendo's YouTube channel, players can enjoy the classic puzzle game steeped in Pokemon nostalgia as part of the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack, which costs $50, and is the only way to play Nintendo 60 games on the console. You can rejoin the gang of Ash, Misty, Brock, and Pikachu as they head to Puzzle Village to take part in a new type of Pokemon battle. Though the puzzle format is fairly common now, Pokemon Puzzle League took inspiration from NES title Panel de Pon, where players must align blocks of the same color in order to gain points. This was something that I played as a kid. I rented it from Blockbuster. I had a blast with it. I had a blast with Wave Race 64, some of the other games that I used to rent from there. Pokemon Snap, I used to get there. Clay Fighters. Nintendo 64 genuinely had a lot of really good games. Now, a lot of those games probably don't look great or play that great nowadays, but back when that was what we had, Nintendo was killing it as far as games, and a lot of these games were fantastic. So I ended up picking up the expansion pack. I ended up paying the money for it. I have been holding off on it because it's $50, and $50 for just a handful of N64 games wasn't a justifiable cause enough for me. But now that I have Pokemon Snap, which I enjoyed when I did jump back into that, with Pokemon Puzzle League coming back, and hopefully we'll be able to actually get Bond GoldenEye. We'll get GoldenEye soon, hopefully within this year. Then we'll be able to kind of round out some of the major hitters that was on the N64 that I'm really looking forward to. There's still a few games that I would love to have on this. I'd be interested to hear what you guys would like to have on this on the actual set itself, if that's something that you're getting into. But I'm glad that they're bringing this out there. And this isn't the only announcement that came from Nintendo. Nintendo's actually releasing a Splatoon 3 Switch OLED model, which is great because the Joy-Cons have a bunch of little decals on them that are the different squids and the different octopus characters and stuff that they have on them. Same thing with the actual dock itself, but the controllers are so beautiful. The left controller is a deep purple that goes to a magenta as it kind of has that gradient as it goes down, or that ombre. Oh, I think it's ombre effect. And then the right Joy-Con actually has yellow at the top and then bleeds into a green, very much in the same way that a lot of the paint colors were for Splatoon. You had you had green, and then you had purple, and then you had red and blue, white and black were some of the different colors. Lots of different color combinations that they had for the different Splatfests, ketchup and mayo, you know, they had for a while as well. And just the turf wars in general. I played a ton of Splatoon 2. It's probably one of my highest played games on Switch. And I'm looking forward to Splatoon 3. I've been tempted to get an OLED model, but I'm genuinely going to hold out until Breath of the Wild 2, just because I think that they'll probably do a special edition for that. And if they do, I want to do the upgrade then, where I can have my Zelda, because if you don't know, I'm a huge Zelda fan. I am an absolute, like, dyed-in-the-wool Zelda fan. I've been playing Zelda games my whole life. I cannot wait for Breath of the Wild 2. I picked up a Switch because of Breath of the Wild 2, or Breath of the Wild 1. I played well over 300 hours in that. And while I know that that pales in comparison to most people, it was because of Sea of Thieves that ended up getting me out of Nintendo for a while and into Xbox. So I'm looking forward to the next OLED model where it has a theme that's based around Zelda, Breath of the Wild. I'll probably pick up that. Hopefully we get an actual upgrade to the Switch OLED hardware itself, so it's actually more powerful, because right now, a lot of those games, if I'm being 100% honest, the Nintendo ones, great. Most of them usually don't have any issues, but that system is getting long in the tooth, and a lot of developers that are now developing for PS5 and Xbox Series X and S are not looking to actually port their content to the Switch. It's just not powerful enough. Some of them are doing the streaming features, but they really need to figure out how they can recapture some of that that community that was picking up the Switch to have modern games portably, because there's no more PS Vita, there's no more PSP, there's no Xbox handheld system. And unless you buy a Switch, or no, what is it? A Steam Deck, and you go into the Steam ecosystem, which, if I'm being 100% honest, is a great way to do it too, because a lot of those games are available as well as cheap. You really don't have a good way to do this. And I think a lot of people want to be able to play Nintendo games on top of playing all the other games that are available, all the third-party games that come to all the other consoles that have not been ported over to the Switch. It's a huge miss for Nintendo to be leaving that on the table. There's a ton of money to be had. There's a ton of marketing to be had about how you can play the same games that other consoles are playing, but portably. That is the main drive of the Switch. It is something that you can do that everyone enjoys. And if you want to do something like that, you really do have to get a Steam Deck, which a Steam Deck is significantly bigger. It is significantly more expensive, and you really do have to commit to a whole nother ecosystem. Whereas the Switch is still very keen on using Nintendo hardware, being very light, being very affordable, things like that. Hey Paisanos, it is the end of the show, and if you got that reference, you're old like me. That's gonna do it for this episode of the Xbox Weekly Wrap-Up. I know we talked a lot about PlayStation, but I genuinely am super excited for God of War, and I can't wait to find out more about how people take a look at Skull and Bones. What did you guys think of Skull and Bones? What did you guys think of God of War? Are you picking up the collector's edition? Are you a Sony fan? Lots of questions that I have for you all, so let me know. Send me a tweet over at the Xbox Wrap-Up on Twitter, or the Xbox Wrap-Up at gmail.com. Plenty of ways to get a hold of me. You can always reach me on Twitter at @CAPT_LOGUN. That's my general main account, where I don't get thirsty. And there's plenty of conversation to be had, so I can't wait to find out what's coming out next week. Sorry for this coming out a little bit later. You know, if you're listening to the podcast, you may not pay attention to the release dates, but I've been trying to get these out on Fridays. It's been tough, but I'm still trying to get these out in each week, even if it feels like it's going to be a little bit later than normal. But rest assured, I'm committed to doing this, and hopefully you guys are along with it for me. Or with it. Hopefully you guys are with me for it. Yeah, that's it, right? Doesn't matter. We're getting out of here. Later.